Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. But first, happy 90th birthday to Queen Elizabeth. See, Jim, we don't wish every elderly world leader to die a sudden death. We like the ones who promote freedom, and the ones who repress their people, it's a different story.
You know, Greg, the only thing I can add to that is to quote the
great law enforcement philosopher Frank Drebin, that no matter how silly it may seem to us Americans to have a queen, we have a duty to be gracious hosts. So congratulations, Queen Elizabeth, no matter how silly you are.
All right. On to the good martini now. And yesterday we found out that the Treasury has made its decision on the $10 bill and the $20 bill. We previewed this on Monday, that because of the success of Hamilton the musical, Hamilton is safe on the front of the $10 bill. There will be, I believe, murals of suffragettes on the back. The $20 bill, Andrew Jackson, come 2020, will no longer be on the front. It will be Harriet Tubman. So, Jim, we've explained in the past why this incessant push for identity politics has made this process kind of odious from a conservative perspective. But given what we know about the Obama administration and who they could have put on this bill, Harriet Tubman, who is obviously a hero, ran the Underground Railroad, Republican, big fan of the Second Amendment and so forth, they could have done a whole lot worse and were actually pretty happy with the choice, even though they went around about it the wrong way.
I was going to say, Greg, I'm having this specific debate on Twitter right before we began taping the podcast, that you look at Harriet Tubman and all you see is, well, they went and had to put an African-American woman on her. Well, there's a heck of a lot more to Harriet Tubman than her skin color and gender. It's interesting you see the lefties celebrating, yay, we have a black woman on the denomination. I don't know if they didn't realize this is a deeply religious, gun-toting Republican who fought for freedom in defiance of laws against a government that refused to. Like, this was a radical anti-government activist who ran around with a gun and believed that Jesus talked to her, right? This is about as good as it gets. And I, deep down, I think the people, you know, a good chunk of the lefties calling for her don't really know much of her history. So, you know, my attitude is like, take it. We have a great opportunity here. This is a wonderful time to tell, one, this important chapter of American history and her role in the Underground Railroad. And what's more, her, you know, she was a spy during the Civil War. Like, finally, they're making a biopic about her. And this kind of this, oh, hey, here's this great story of a inspiring, brave American, you know, standing up for the true values of freedom. And obviously, you know, oh, by the way, it just happened to be a Republican. And we're going to take off a Democrat. Why are Greta Van Susteren and Donald Trump complaining about this? This is like an own goal for the left, right? Political correctness actually improved history here. For some reason, you know, I should point out that Trump wants to put her on the $2 bill. Sorry, Thomas Jefferson, another Democrat for what it's worth. Having said that, Greg, how many $2 bills do you see floating around out there?
Not too many.
If you do them, it's like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, really unique and rare. Greta Van Susteren took the idea of the $25 bill, and apparently the Treasury Department said, no, we're not doing that. Because then, theoretically, like, every president could get their own bill.
Right.
You know, Reagan would get the 40, you know. And you'd say, oh, I was supposed to get a George W. Bush a change, and I lucked out. They gave me a George H.W. Bush a change, you know. It could get complicated that way. So all in all, look, this is a something for us to celebrate. And look, let's, you know, I would tell my fellow folks on the right, let's tell her story and let's emphasize these parts that tend to get airbrushed out of the history books because they're inconvenient. Oh, by the way, she took up arms against a government she thought was illegitimate.
Nice, nice. And it's important to get this story across because the top Google question after the news came out yesterday, who is Harriet Tubman? America? You can do better than this, and now we possibly can if the biopic is honest in telling the story and people actually bother come 2020 to figure out who that person is on their $20 bill. So
let's hope that deep down, Greg, it really meant, what more should I know about Harriet Tubman? Not, I have no idea who this person is.
Yes. All right, on to the bad martini now, and on to Donald Trump. He is now about 48 hours post New York primary victory. He's got more blue and purple states coming up. He did a sit down with the folks at the Today Show with Matt Lauer and Willie Geist, and they took some questions from the audience, and one of the questions was, hey, what are you going to do about the transgender issue? What's your policy on inclusion at your company, and what do you specifically think about the North Carolina bathroom law? Here's what Donald Trump, the guy who swept the South, said about it.
You leave it the way it is. There have been very few complaints the way it is. People go, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate. There has been so little trouble. And the problem with what happened in North Carolina is the strife and the economic punishment that they're taking. So I would say that's probably the best.
Do you have any transgender people working in your organization?
I don't know.
No?
I really don't know. I probably do. I really don't know.
So if Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses?
That is correct.
Okay.
Different issue, also a social issue.
You know, there's a big move to create new bathrooms. Problem with that is for transgender. That would be first of all, I think that would be discriminatory in a certain way. It would be unbelievably expensive for businesses and for the country. Leave it the way it is.
So he's hardcore left on this, Jim. Not only does he think that the North Carolina law is a bad idea, he's not even in favor of the single-use bathrooms because that's discrimination. So wherever you want to go, that's where you should go to the bathroom, and I would assume he'd have the same position on locker rooms and so forth. So for all the evangelicals who were so enlightened about Donald Trump being one who spoke for them, congratulations. He's exactly who we told you he was.
Anybody in the South want a do-over? Anybody want to, double? Oh, wait. This is why you vote for established political personas, where you know what you're getting, where they have long voting records, where you have records of leadership. You know exactly who they are and what they're going to take. So they don't suddenly, oh, surprise, I don't agree with you on this issue. It's interesting, it gets into the issue of which bathroom, because a friend of mine made this point to me that because of the Americans with Disabilities Act, signed into law by George H.W. Bush, most public buildings are supposed to have a handicap accessible bathroom, or sometimes you're also seeing the family bathroom,
right?
For parents of either gender to change the diaper of the child or things like that, which is designed for both genders, so everybody can use it. So if you are transgender, if for some reason you don't fit into either one of those categories, you define yourself however the heck, then you can use that one, right? And all of a sudden, we don't have a guy with an Audi instead of an innie, so to speak, going into the women's room or something like that. So you'd think we'd be able to work this out. But again, I kind of asked the question, Greg, do you think Donald Trump, one, would have said this before all the Southern primaries? And if he had, would he have done as well? And some people might say this is not necessarily a break, but there has been an argument that North Carolina is just getting, unbelievable grief and aggravation for taking a stand where a lot of people say, look, you're either one or the other, and you should use the one that matches up with, do you take care of business standing up or do you take care of business sitting down? Pretty straightforward there. It's kind of a baffling set of circumstances. I don't think you'll get a huge backlash. What I'm finding fascinating, Greg, is how many people on Twitter are changing, all of a sudden out of nowhere, they're anti-federalist. All of a sudden, North Carolina doesn't have the right to pick its own path on this. There has to be one unifying approach. The same way they want one unifying approach for all primaries and caucuses. it's like everything we used to stand for as Republicans is out the door because of the whims of this guy. So there we go. That's where we stand, and we shouldn't be surprised. Only thing I can say, Greg, is, we did tell you so. We did warn you this was the kind of thinking you were going to get from Donald Trump.
So what's the reaction going to be here? Is Trump eventually going to be told by his advisors, that's not who most Republicans
Do you remember when you said we should punish women who get abortions?
So does he backtrack, or do you think you're going to see more of what you've seen on Twitter and people going, well, actually these people have a point?
I think because he's closer to the general, where is this going to hurt him?
I don't think it's going to hurt him in any of the states next week, but if he obviously wants the Christian conservative base and the folks who got him off to such a great start in South Carolina and beyond, he's going to need them come November. So he's going to either have to double down on this position or figure out where his party actually is on this.
Keep in mind, this is Thursday, Greg. He could have a different opinion by Friday. And it'd be back, switch back Monday, Tuesday. It's very up in the air.
That's true. He had three or four positions on abortion in about a 48-hour span. So way to go, America. Way to go.
If you don't like Trump's position, just wait.
That's right. All right. We don't really enjoy talking about men going to the bathroom and the girls' room, but that's just where the news is right now. So we're going to have to talk about in the crazy martini as well. Curt Schilling, great pitcher for many years. He pitched for the Phillies, won a World Series with the Diamondbacks, pitched for the Orioles, and I believe other teams along the way. He was an ESPN analyst since 2010. He's gotten in trouble a couple different times at ESPN for different social media posts that had nothing to do with his on-air appearance. One time he compared ISIS to the Nazis because that's so horrible, and he got suspended for that and removed from Sunday Night Baseball. Then he was reprimanded but not suspended for suggesting that for her actions at the State Department and beyond, Hillary Clinton belonged under a prison. Now he's been fired. And why? Because on social media he posted this picture of a looks like an older, overweight gentleman, clearly in scantily clad women's clothes, with the caption, "Let him in to the restroom with your daughter or else you're a narrow-minded, judgmental, unloving, racist bigot who needs to die." And then he added to that with his own commentary, "A man is a man no matter what they call themselves. I don't care what they are, who they sleep with. Men's room was designed for the penis. Women's not so much. Now you need laws telling us differently. Pathetic," unquote. ESPN responds by firing him and saying ESPN is an inclusive company. Curt Schilling has been advised that his conduct was unacceptable and his employment with ESPN has been terminated. And obviously there can be a debate about what type of conduct is expected of employees and that sort of thing. But Jim, over the last several years, ESPN has gone so nauseatingly to the left in so many different ways that it's just basically another liberal channel with a few sports highlights thrown in. They have far fewer highlights than they used to on SportsCenter. They used to explain how the game developed and the critical moments. Now they'll show you an NBA game and say, "Hey, look at this great dunk. Okay, on to this next story now." And we saw them championing Michael Sam when he came out right before the NFL draft a few years ago. Caitlyn Jenner gets the Courage Award when there were athletes who lost limbs in military and cancer-stricken athletes and that sort of thing. And anytime President Obama tweets, they just fawn all over it. LeBron James wears a Black Lives Matter T-shirt or a Hands Up, Don't Shoot, one of those T-shirts in warm-ups, and they spend minutes and minutes on that. It's just incessant. Sports should be an oasis from this stuff, and it's just nauseating to watch.
Greg, I want to thank you for leading us down the path for the most genital-focused edition of the Three Martini Lunch ever. One of probably the simplest aspect of this is, like, first of all, how much does what Curt Schilling posts on his Facebook page affect his ability to be a baseball color analyst? I would argue none. Right? I don't think that, you know, either he's doing a good job calling the games or he isn't. If he was to start inserting politics into his telecast or something, it's an easier realm of that. But all of a sudden, we've now become this attitude of the left, which is that if you commit a social sin in their eyes, if you express an opinion that bothers them, then all of a sudden there must be economic consequences. There must be, you know, where you cannot work where you work. You cannot do your job, even if your job is to say, you know, "I thought that ball was an outside, but he called it a strike." This is why people say it's Orwellian. This is why people say it's fascist. When you're going through that list there, Greg, when he got in trouble for comparing ISIS to the Nazis?
Yes.
Was this an insult to the Nazis?
No.
And are we worried about Nazi feelings these days? Were there protesting Illinois Nazis marching around on their way to Bristol, Connecticut to say, "How dare you compare us to these? Our death camps were organized." I'm left baffling. Who exactly got bothered by that comparison there? But again, I think you accurately diagnose that ESPN has become a more and more overtly politically correct in its identity, and it's not why people tune in. And, you know, the fact is, but the amazing thing is, great, this is all happening after Keith Olbermann left.
Right.
Who, you know, is already out looking for a new home after his Trump location.
Right.
So it's a callback to a previous show. So, yeah, so ESPN, like, needs to get back to job one. It reminds me of when NBC, which had the broadcast rights to the Olympics for lots of years, they looked at the ratings and thought they were pretty good, but they thought they could do better. They weren't doing as well amongst women as they wanted, so they started doing those soft focus, you know.
Ugh.
She was, you know, she had Olympic dreams and then her dog died or it fought this disease or that. And, you know, there's all these kind of sob story. All of a sudden it turned into like Oprah's couch. Everyone had to tell this, you know, story of their emotional hardship. And it's and you're almost like, wait, I want to see the people falling down the mountain on the ski jump. That's what, you know, I'm tuning into the Olympics for. And lo and behold, the ratings went down because they stopped, you know, taking care of their core audience. ESPN, the title actually means the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. Greg, I think I'd get some sports there. you know, I'm not looking to be more culturally attuned and a broader mind and more liberal and tolerant. You know, no, just show me the score. That was the great innovation of SportsCenter, that it didn't matter if you were far away from where your home team was. SportsCenter would cover every game, even if it was, you know, Milwaukee versus Tampa Bay, and you didn't care about either one of those teams. For the people who cared about that, that's what made it great. So here we are, Greg. Here we are. Hey, is it Friday yet?
It will be tomorrow.
All right.
Jim, have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.